Okay, like she mentioned, my research is assessing watershed partnerships as adaptive governance structures. And the watershed partnership that I will be working with and assessing is the Beaver Creek watershed. It's a loaded title. You'll surely all get it by the time I'm done. Okay, an outline. I'm going to introduce the topic, talk about the need for further research and tools, then talk about my goals and objectives, methods, and preliminary results. So the need for local watershed partnerships will continue to rise, and this is due to the increasingly complex issues that surround watershed management. That's the, you know, the more and more people you get and more different value systems that are involved, it's just increasingly complex. Now, you all probably already know a watershed partnership addresses water quality within a specific watershed. I'll just clear that up. Evaluations of these partnerships have transpired. Actually, a whole research field has transpired to evaluate these partnerships, but many products to date tend to miss the mark and have been sort of unconstructive. So there's a call for more assessment tools that foster learning that promotes sustainability. So learning for improvement will ultimately get you sustainability of a water management. So why is there a need? Ideologies of the past. Basically, I won't go too far back, just progressive era. The gospel of efficiency really bred out, well, they sought to breed out inefficiency and let the specialists deal with it. They know best, let's just let them do it. But in the process, they bred out public opinion from the policy process, and we still see remnants of this today. Now, adaptive governance structures have emerged in response to the inability for institutions to handle these wicked problems. Now, a wicked problem is a problem when you're trying to solve it. The solution of one or more of its aspects normally creates even more complex problems. An example of an adaptive governance structure is a watershed initiative. This has many names. It can also be called watershed partnership, stakeholder partnership, etc. And they are characterized by their local origin and decentralized arrangement, bottom-up decision-making, and their focus is on cooperation with the ultimate goal of improving water quality. As of 2000, there were 346 of these watershed partnerships. That was 8 years ago, I know, but that's a lot. And that was just west of the Mississippi. That's where they were first, very popular. 150 of those were in California alone, so very popular. And assessment tools today are typically outcome-oriented. Here's an example of an outcome assessment. Notice the emphasis on the outcomes here. Now, this is a very popular tool among government agencies, specifically the EPA, as they like to know what a program has produced, and this is for funding purposes. So it's meant to be an evaluation going forwards, yet a planning tool going backwards. So you fill out these outcomes, your intended outcomes, and then you plan backwards. So for sure, in its own right, it's useful, but it's been termed a black box method because it doesn't allow an evaluator to establish variables in which the outcome came from. So you may have been funded, but you don't know why necessarily. You may have had these impressive outcomes, but you're not sure how you got there. And that's in the factory here, as Dr. Ostermeyer likes to call it. It's where all the sweat is, and that's the process of a program. So my goals are to promote the improvement and sustainability of watershed programs while ultimately advancing the quality and effectiveness of environmental management. I know it's lofty. Aid watershed support institutions like the UT Water Resources Research Center within ICE. Oops, sorry. And ICE is, within UT, it's the Institute for Secure and for a Secure and Sustainable Environment. Now, the Water Resources Research Center has been designated the Center of Excellence for Watershed Management in Tennessee with the Cumberland River Compact. This is a designation by EPA. And their job is to help these institutions with their efforts. And they're going to need tools for planning and assessing these watershed partnerships. And so they've expressed interest in this research. My objectives are to consult the literature, sustainable development literature, sustainable water basin management literature, develop a tool that really gets at this learning to improve for sustainability, apply the tool to the Beaver Creek Watershed Partnership, I'm coming right back to that, modify and tweak tool according to feedback from participants. So here's the Beaver Creek Watershed. It's the largest in the orange here. So it's the largest in Knox County, and it's located entirely within Knox County. It's 86 square miles, that's what it covers, and its main stem, Beaver Creek, and its seven major tributaries are all listed on Tennessee's 303D list, which is the list of impaired bodies of water. This is due to sediment, excess nutrients, and bacteria and pathogens. Two of the five communities that it runs through, Gibbs and Carnes, are considered to be the most rapidly urbanizing areas in Knox County. So, and that's by the Metropolitan Planning Commission. So there's a real need, and of course the major pollutant is sediment due to the construction. The Beaver Creek Watershed Association was formed to deal with these issues. They were formed in 2003, community-based group of citizens living in these areas here. The association is a 501c3 nonprofit. It was created by the Beaver Creek Task Force, which was created by the Water Quality Forum in 1998. Now, the Water Quality Forum is an organization that addresses water issues in Knoxville and surrounding counties. Very important. So, a restoration plan has been devised to address the activities of non-point source pollution by the Beaver Creek Task Force or Association, which comes from construction, fertilization, and then they also look at sewer overflows. I'll be working closely with this association as I apply the tool to their institutional and process dynamics. Methods: review research literature and agency documents, whatever I can get my hands on. I will perform personal interviews with practitioners utilizing the theory triangulation method, which is basically the use of multiple perspectives in data interpretation. It's really important that I collaborate through this whole process as I need to develop a realistic tool. I'll also use verification, which means I'll just share the results as I go along with all the participants for feedback. I will also convene a focus group to review the end product and where they can pick it apart, basically, and critique it and give me an even better end product. I will rely heavily on Beatrice Heidelin's work on criteria creation. She maintains that by concentrating evaluations on the twin concepts of participation and integration, that an evaluator can really get at the program's potential for sustainable watershed management. Both of these concepts, participation and integration, are well-established dimensions of both sustainable development and sustainable river basin management. So essentially, evaluator will be assessing how knowledge and values were integrated into the planning process and how commitment, legitimacy, or acceptance for the resulting plan is generated. It's also based on extensive literature, so that really helps. The theoretical foundation is deductive. Now, most tools to date use this inductive reasoning in which they observe with surveys, interviews, what have you, make generalizations by pulling out themes of success and go from there in making their theories. This is problematic because success can mean different things to different people. Also, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's congruent with sustainable development. So since my criteria are derived from the theoretical construct of sustainability, I am down here and will go up from here. Tools. Why apply the tool? I must test the practicality of the tool. Are the criteria reasonable, basically? As in, can one perform this tool in a reasonable amount of time and effort? Very important. Is the information I need to complete the tool available? Are the criteria unrealistically narrow? And is it really giving me the information that I need? Why apply it to the Beaver Creek Watershed Partnership? Well, there's many reasons. It's been going on for at least 10 years, the efforts have, so it's mature and it has the information to perform this type of tool. The willingness of the people involved is obviously very important, and they're happy to help me with my research. The impacts of the watershed, so there's a real need. And the EPA considers the Beaver Creek Watershed Initiative a huge success and have expressed the need for extensive documentation as they would like to replicate this across the region. Methods for application, relevant document review. I will review anything I can get that's unofficial, official documents for criteria qualification. Perform personal interviews once again. I will use the informal conversational interview method. This is basically the ability to spontaneously generate questions instead of just having a protocol where the questions are exactly the same for every interviewee. I need the flexibility to probe for certain signals, and that's going to be different depending on the interviewee. Also, there may be a setting component, like I'm on the side of a stream bank, and I need to be able to ask contextual questions. Also, snowball sampling, I will attempt to gain more interviews with each interview, so through their acquaintances, until I start getting the same information. This in itself is a great way to reveal relationships or networks that have been formed, and that's exactly the kind of thing I need to know anyway. So preliminary results. I've come up with an assessment tool matrix. It's very loose right now, but it's what I will create my questions out of. First, I will look at the structural assessment, resilience, test the institutional capacity. So partnerships, partnership involvement, diversity, I'll look at the extent of tools and data availability, policy influence, or the behavior, evidence of behavioral outputs. This is important for accountability. Can they produce results? Participation and cooperation. How well are they including knowledge and ideological orientations? Generating commitment, legitimacy, acceptance, handling power asymmetries. Are they including all the relevant actors, and do they have procedures for this? Stakeholder capacity, to what extent have personal networks been formed, like I was just talking about earlier? Integration, are they integrating all relevant disciplines and all relevant knowledge? How do they handle these different views of knowledge? Across values, the identification of most relevant values in relation to the current issue. This is important because you have, you know, the widespread array of values and the extremes. Developer is really concerned with his livelihood. The environmentalist who's concerned with the ecosystem. You've got to incorporate those in the beginning, or you'll just have to deal with it later, and it won't be as pretty. All these criteria really bring out the learning to improve for sustainability linkage, and the literature backs all this up. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Ostermeyer, my major professor, Tim Gangaware with the Water Resources Research Center, Julie Mulder, and Roy Arthur, the Knox County Watershed Coordinator. Questions? Did I confuse everyone? Did you tell them you were going to hit them if they... Why is the Beaver Creek a good one to play for this? Well, it is, and I think I forgot to mention that, it is in my backyard, which makes it practical. I'm sure there are others that I could perform this pool on, but we're really involved, as you know, involved with you, in the helping the Resource Center with creating these pools, and they're involved in the Beaver Creek Watershed Association. So it's all just a nice family. And that answers your question. I'm sure there are. That's a good one. This is Sam. Well, I'm not sure if you didn't hear that. How many watershed groups are around Knoxville? Literally all the information I find, and I wasn't really looking for that, necessarily, but that there were the 346 in 2000 west of the Mississippi, so it would probably be quite a bit more interesting to know up to date and around the area. So I will look into that.